Welcome to the Elevating La Cultura podcast, a space where I talk with Latinas who are passionate about what they do and are willing to share that passion with others to change the narrative, especially for the next generation. Each season is centered around different topics, but all with the Latina perspective. Welcome to season 9, where we will talk about reflecting on personal stories and letting our brilliance shine. I'm so excited to share these powerful conversations. So vámonos, and let's get into it. I hope everyone is having a great week. My next guest is Dalia, a first-generation Chicana Indigenous educator dedicated to empowering communities through somatic, social, emotional learning, and restorative justice. Dalia has earned a master's degree in curriculum and instruction focused on community engagement and a certification in somatic healing modalities. As a somatic movement leader, Dalia guides people to be present with their bodies through meditative and somatic techniques designed to allow emotions to be processed and healed. Dalia Quintanilla is a founder of Liberated Learning, an organization aimed at transforming learning environments to be restorative and healing-centered using community-based solutions and approaches. With over 8 years of experience in education, Dalia has served as a K-8 classroom teacher, reading intervention specialist, impact coach, workshop facilitator, and curriculum designer. This is an amazing episode, so let's get into it. Hey, I am so happy to be finally talking with you today. This episode has been a long time coming because we met way back last year when you came to a Comadre networking event. And since then, I have wanted to have you on the podcast because I think what you're doing is amazing. So before I continue bragging on you, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Karina. My name is Dalia Quintanilla. I'm the founder of Liberated Learning. I am a somatic movement healer. I'm a restorative justice practitioner and social emotional learning specialist. I'm a human. I'm a dog mama. I'm a sister. I'm a lover of dance and art and nature and talking to trees and listening to the wind and all this fun stuff. And yeah, building community with Liberated Learning, all these pieces, you know, sort of come into this big stew that I feel like I've been cooking for the past year. And going to your, you know, networking event was one of the first times I stepped out as an entrepreneur to sort of, you know, see and connect with other like-minded folks. And I just remember being in awe at we on the beach, you know, we're having snacks, and it just was a great time to connect with you. So I'm so excited to be here today and just for our conversation.
My gosh, if you are listening and have never been to a Comadre networking event, it is networking epic. Reimagined because for like real. She said, we were on the beach, chilling, putting our feet in the water. I mean, we were swatting away the bees, but I mean, we could only do so much with nature.
Yeah. It was great.
But yes, if you're listening, you got to tap into the next time we meet. We do it monthly. I want to just mention the fact that you led a somatic movement at our recent Latina Brilliance One Day Summit, and it was amazing. Mm-hmm. And the thing that has touched my heart the most is your interaction with my daughter. Mm-hmm. And when she saw on my schedule that I was going to have a podcast recording with you, she was like, Dalia, she's my friend.
Oh,
she's like,
my heart.
You were the one person that truly connected with her and saw her, and that moment I guess affirmed her in who she was. And maybe I'm thinking about it too grand, but it's those little tiny interactions with adults that can really impact children. Mm-hmm. And so
I love this.
Just like
Because we are
what you,
friends.
and your practice, what you gifted to the experience and what you led was truly amazing. But I also am so grateful and thankful for your intentionality when interacting with my daughter, because that you were the one person that she was like, oh, Dalia, I love her. She's my friend. Like, she
Hey,
really,
yes. Oh,
yes.
that's beautiful. And to me it brings up my experience also in teaching, which is where my story starts. It was and I was that person, that older, sister. I was that cousin that was watching all the kids. Like, that's just naturally who I've been. Even in my childhood is, gravitated towards children, like love their light and their innocence. And then that turned into my first career, and so anytime I see kids, I always, you're right, I'm like intentional about like, let me look at you in the eye, let me talk to you for real, let me show, like give you that space and time. It's an art. It's a real like, it's a real practice to be with kids of all ages and be able to help make them feel seen. And it makes me feel so good that she did feel seen, because I was like really trying to get to know her. So yeah, that's beautiful. And it's so much part of like the work and my inspiration for the work that I do now, sort of like my why, right, is to create spaces and give adults that training to help them create spaces for kids where they feel safe, where they feel validated, where they feel affirmed, where they feel like their inherent talents and skills and things they're interested in are celebrated and prioritized in the classroom, and it's in my teaching experience, that's not how it is, and it wasn't the norm, and it's not how schools are set up. So it was devastating after my first year teaching to realize, why do we treat kids this way? Why are these sort of belief systems that adults have, that kids are up to no good, that they're lacking, that there's something wrong with them, that they're broken. And especially kids that come from Black and Brown communities, it was so much more like stigmatized. And the first school I actually taught at was one that had that stigma of like, oh, that's the Black and Brown school, that's bad. Like, that's the one that, they got all the bad kids over there. And was completely different than my student teaching experience, which was at an affluent, mostly white, school. So right away I'm like, what is this? But yeah, that's what drives my work now, and that's why I found that restorative justice and now the somatic piece, right? Like, how we live this stuff is so important knowledge to receive as an adult, as a student, as a young person, anybody, right? Because it gives us the actual tools to connect with each other, to have those meaningful interactions, to be intentional, to recognize when we're having a feeling and not run away from it and be with it. So it's so interesting, like all these little pieces, but it all is part of the work I'm doing.
So, how long were you actually teaching in the classroom? From like, because you said that you were shifting from student teaching to actually being in the classroom. So, how long was that period before you were like, let me see what I can do?
Yeah, it was 6 years of trying to make that career work. So I started my first year and then I went straight back to school because I did not feel equipped. I did not feel like what I had learned in my undergrad actually gave me anything of value to meet the kids that and the actual reality of what teaching is. So I went straight back to school, got my master's in curriculum and instruction because I was super curious about what are we teaching kids, the curriculum, and how are we teaching kids, like the actual neuroscience, the actual like physically, how do we learn? Like, and it's crazy, right? Like, that should be, things were taught in undergrad, but it wasn't. So when I went to get my master's, I was still in the classroom. I was subbing, still gaining that experience, but at the same time, blown away by the research, the pedagogy, the brilliant minds that have come before us that have already given us the playbook. It's like, look, culture is the main, huge, like biggest piece when it comes to activating a kid's zone of genius. If you are not considering a student's culture and where they come from and how they grew up and how they get are talked to at home and how they interact with their family, you're missing the whole point. You're missing the whole plot, right? Like that's, and it's proven, you know? So I'm reading this stuff and I'm like, what? You know, just empowered with knowledge because it's there. It's all there, but it's just not practiced, which is the exact point of like what liberated learning aims to do, which is, yes, we know these things and we can conceptualize all day and we can talk about the theory. But what I'm really interested in is the practice. How do we live this in the classroom? How do we live this in interactions with students? So after my master's, it was, okay, I'm excited. Like, let me apply this learning. You know, I was still trying to make the school thing work. And I tried a bunch of different ways. I was a reading intervention specialist. And I was like, maybe the one-on-one, you know, it's better. No, it wasn't it, you know, and then I shifted again and it was a different angle. No, that's not it. And then I went back into the classroom, eighth grade teaching. And I was like, I love this because I was able to practice what I had learned. And then I met up against the system. I met up against a principal, an administration team, a school culture that did not accept me. And actually quite the opposite, you know, like treated me in a stigmatizing way. There was a lot of hate I received from my principal, a lot of shade, a lot of, you know, just I'm like, like that. And it was just interesting because she had never been in my classroom, which, by the way, is not she's supposed to, you know, come see what's happening in each classroom. So she avoided my classroom at all costs. But just by the way I interacted with kids in the hallway, the way I walked my class to PE, you know, it's felt that was something different about me. And because of that, it was like targeted to sort of try to single me out as like someone who doesn't know what they're doing. You're too young, you're too nice, you're too friendly, like you don't know what you're doing. So that ultimately ended up being a great growing moment for me, where I had to learn advocacy and, you know, sticking up for myself and inviting her into my classroom, because I'm that new. And I think what they were still operating out of was that traditional model, right? So they don't understand the ways in which a healthy, healing, actually productive classroom and relationship building with students looks like. So that pushed me out. I was like, I'm done. I'm not doing this anymore. Like, there's no way I'm going to take this disrespect for this pay, because I was still in poverty, it felt like. I was just like, why am I going to just take this? This makes no sense. And I found, again, another like avenue, right? Like, I still care about kids. I still care about this. But how do we help? So that's when I started training teachers, leading workshops, writing curriculum. And I was like, whoa, I can do all this stuff. I'm like, the skills. And I was blown away by the opportunity that started to like, and the curiosity that started to bubble, right? It's like, oh, you don't really know the path, that there's other options until you see the other options. So that's kind of what led me to come now to this entrepreneur world and be like, you know what, let me do that, but on my own. Yeah,
I think it's so important when we, well, let me back up, because let me call
There's
out
a lot
the
here.
System.
There's a lot here.
Yes, yes. Let me just acknowledge that even though like we are stepping into a place of understanding what is wrong and how we can like shift it and fix it, the system is still not accepting of that. It's like the system is so strong that it's like they don't know how to let go of that because of this fear of losing control. And that's the exact point of the system, is to have control, to have order, to have just like a step and repeat. Like, you should be just being able to produce. And when you put that language to what our children are experiencing, like in the school system, it's kind of painful, because then we're just like, well, what are we doing? Like, why is it like this? But at the same time, it's so hard to break that system or introduce something new. Like you said, like, there's so much resistance because of that fear of losing control.
Oh, exactly.
And so like, I applaud you for continuing to pour into the people that can actually instill change, like the teachers. And I know it's so hard, but if it's not for people like you who are just like starting to shift and like really trying to figure out a way that would make the most impact, then it's never going to happen. And having these conversations over and over and over again, just to bring awareness, is so important to continue that propelling motion of like, we can do this.
Change.
It's just going to be real hard. And it's going to take some time.
Yes. Oh, yes. I'm glad you brought that up, because it's, and from, I don't know, from the things I've seen and heard and been in and seen kids experience within the system, you know, I feel very strongly about the need for that change. And it's sort of like this little fire under me that it's that urgency to like, y'all, babies are being traumatized. Like, there's no like cute or like, you know, sugarcoaty way to say it when you're talking about these themes of control and power and wanting kids to assimilate and fit into a certain box and follow certain rules and literally go against their design biologically. That's this other piece that I'm like, what? You want kindergartners to sit still all day long? That's not good for us. Like, we're just not, human beings are not designed in this way. And that's what, it always takes me all the way back to the inception of schooling, was created so that we could become factory workers during the Industrial Revolution. It is like so insane that our society, like you said, is resistant so much to change that it would not recognize the need, the desperate need to evolve with society as we evolve. Look at the technology we have. Oh my God. Like, you know, we need to change. We need to change. So yeah, it's definitely something that's like so close to my heart because of the experiences I've had within that system and been like this close to it and just absolutely disgusted. Like, I don't have nice words to say, because it's just the truth. It's just the truth of, you know, what I've seen and experienced. So yeah, thank you for naming that, because it is hard and there is that resistance, but to me it's also, there's this like, yeah, and we're hurting people, you know, so like, we're gonna have to get over the fear of change and actually start to evolve, like now, you know, like it kind of reminds me of how, you know, white supremacy teaches us to sort of like comfort white people and comfort, you know, the status quo and be like, okay, yeah, like all our DEI trainings and all the trainings in schools that are just so fake. Like, it's just all about like, okay, but let's make it like nice so that when the white person hears it, it doesn't hurt as bad. You know, and it's like, no, like, I just, and also me growing up in Iowa, mind you, so there's another whole layer here of the trauma that I experienced all throughout my, you know, childhood, being one of the only brown girls all that. So to me, there's this other just layer of, there's a little more like, not harshness, but like, let's go. Like, I'm tired. We're tired of like sugarcoating it or making it seem like it's not urgent. It's urgent. It's super urgent.
Yeah, and that brings me to ask, how are you healing yourself and creating space for you to continue doing this work? Because, like, I've been doing the work that I'm doing for 6+ years, and at the beginning, it was rough. Like, when you pull that thread and you realize, like, oh my gosh, my whole life, like, was I was being made to assimilate. And like, when you start thinking back at how when it first started, and you're just like, what? But you believe in the work that you're doing so much that you will are willing to put in the work. And I remember when I made an appointment with my therapist a few years ago, and I was like, look, I'm gonna be doing this work. I'm going like 100% in. But I know I need to like address these parts of my history, and I need to like reconcile and heal that part in order for me to get to the next level. So I'm curious as to what your journey was and is, and how you are doing the work in your own life in order to be able to best be there to support others.
It's such a good question. It's so exactly like the path of entrepreneurship is like if you ain't healing at the same time, there's gonna be some turbulence. But luckily for me, the realization of really needing to address, what happened to me in my childhood and start my healing journey, started about 4 years ago when I first moved to Chicago. So I had finished my master's and I came here just to get out of Iowa mostly, but also because I was searching for community. I was searching for, people that thought like me and wanted to make similar impact as I did, and never really having that as a child or a teen or a young adult, never having community that thought like me. So when I got here, it was like, wow. Big difference. And still, even today, sometimes I find myself like with the events you put on and other people like the Latina Brilliance Summit, all these things, I'm just like, it's healing for me in and of itself to be in those spaces. But more specifically, when it comes to my healing journey, it's been a lot of being with discomfort, being with the scary parts of my story without judging, without criticizing, without blaming, or like trying to intellectualize, like make it make sense. Because there's just some things that happen to us as humans that don't make sense, that aren't just literally just aren't okay, just aren't. And there's a level of acceptance I've been able to find through therapy. Hugely therapy, therapy, therapy. I 2 years ago found a art-centered somatic therapist, which at the time I didn't know. I'm like, oh, this sounds cool. Like, you specialize in all these things. Perfect. But that's what really started opening my eyes and my heart and my body to the world of somatics. And not recognizing that that was really where the biggest disconnect was when it came to me being honest with myself about where I was at. So I, in my teen years, it started, but I was diagnosed with a condition called vasovagal syncope, which pretty much just means you faint at, medical situations. There's no like actual like reasoning they understand. It's just a fancy way to say that you faint sometimes. So that would happen to me, when I'd go get a shot, or sometimes a doctor could just be like explaining to me the procedure and I'd be like out, and just I always kind of accepted it. I was like, this is just something I'm just this is just something about me that happens. And then a year ago, I tore my ACL, which was a crazy thing for me. Worst fear ever was surgery. Never have had any major injury prior, and played soccer all my life. Like, I was rough and tough, like muddy girl, and just playing with friends, like lighthearted, tears her ACL. So it's like, wow, okay, let's get into this. And so with that, you know, big injury and surgery looming and all these scary things that, you know, were going on with my body, I was like, I have to address this fainting thing. Like this, you know, like I don't want to be fainting when I have to go to the doctor. And it was just like another added layer of stress. So that's where real more intense work started happening with my therapist of like, how do I ground? You know, what is going on here? I went to a neurologist and they were basically like, yeah, you're just stuck in your trauma. I'm like, okay, neurologist, you're supposed to tell me like what's, you know, like, okay. So that's really where a lot big shifts started happening for me in the healing, where I was like, oh, I can connect to my breath. And my breath helps keep me grounded. Oh, if I put a little lavender on my wrist and take it in with me with the doctors and just like focus on the smell, it helps me stay here, like not leave my body. So that was a huge moment in my healing journey. And it still is a practice today where it's a moment to moment practice, really, of just staying present with my body, listening to my body's cues, like paying attention to certain like pains or things that are going on with my body. And obviously the somatic, you know, healing and the practice really helps me to just continue to stay present with what's here.
Yeah, I didn't know that about you, but I appreciate you sharing, because mm-hmm. I feel like that there's so many things that we keep silent and don't realize, like, oh, other people might be dealing with that and we can actually find community. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't have to deal with this alone. So yeah, thank you for sharing. Mm-hmm. And I like, that's amazing that you have been able to find ways to stay grounded, which brings me to mm-hmm. my next question. And that's like explaining the somatic movement, because you just got like certified, right?
Yeah.
I don't even
movement
know
healer.
The exact. Yes.
Yeah, there's lots of different titles, but yeah, a movement healer. We'll go with that.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. when I had you come in for the summit, I didn't exactly know what to expect.
Most people don't.
Yeah. I saw things on social media and I was like, that sounds like that is going to be a great way to end our time together. Like, let's do it. And I mm-hmm. trusted you completely. And it was amazing. It was an amazing experience. But I'd love for you to talk a little bit more about that and maybe explain what that all means.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for trusting me. Yeah, it was so like, okay, yeah, let's do it. Fine, sure, come through. Yeah, somatic movement healing is a newer modality that people are, you know, starting to learn about, and it's becoming more, you know, consciously aware of. It's a modality where we practice being present with our body. Like, that's the simplest way to put it. We're practicing being present with our body, and we're using all these different techniques to help us stay present. What I find is so powerful about the method is that humans today, we're overstimulated, right? We all know this, like there's so much and we're just used to being overstimulated. So when someone tells you go sit down and meditate and that's going to help you heal your problems, you're like, yeah, sure. Okay. I don't know about y'all, but for me, silent, still meditation is so difficult. It is so difficult. I'm also in like neurodivergent brain. So like I need a fidget. I need something. Like it's so hard. With somatic movement healing, there is the music is a huge part of the experience. So like there is a whole journey that, you know, we take people through where, as you kind of experienced in that little snippet we did, it starts with sort of like nature sounds or frequency, you know, things to get us grounded and connect to the breath. And then it turns into something like you would hear at a DJ rave, and it's like, okay, shake your body, right? Like it's the switch up. It's a whole experience in the music, right? And then we use breath work. So, okay, let's focus on our breath or certain techniques that help us be more aware of our breath. Then we use meditation. But again, we're not thinking of meditation as sit still, be quiet, you know, just eliminate all the craziness. It's dynamic meditation. So we might be invited into a movement, right? And a breath. And I invite you to close your eyes, and the movement, the music, the breath become your meditation. It is like in the movement, in the practice, in the repetition of the movement, you find presence. You can find that sort of like stillness, that peace of just like being here in the moment with the movement, with your breath, with the music. So it's like a little bit of like the stimulation, right? And it helps us to like stay here, stay present. Another part of the method is the somatic postures. So there's certain movements that help us connect with certain emotion. So like there's a movement for forgiveness. There's a movement for love. There's a movement for enlightenment, right? That's one that we practiced at the Latina Brilliance Summit, which no one knew, but I was like, yeah, we're getting enlightened, you know? And then the other part that's really fun is ecstatic dance. So this is also something that I've noticed is starting to become a little more popular, and people are, you know, more interested in trying it. There's a few places around in Chicago that I know offer ecstatic dance, but it's basically a time where you let your body move the way it wants to move. And the way I phrase that usually in the practice is let your body move you. Like let your body tell you what it needs. And if we can practice shutting the mind off of like, what do I look like? This isn't choreography. This is not like how so-and-so, you know, dances, because it's not about that. You know, if we can shut that off and we can be with our body and let it be weird, let it look silly, let it look, you know, like whatever, and just go there. There's so much healing that can happen. Like there's so much change that can happen in your body. And release that can happen in your body. So it's such a powerful, potent practice. I've been able to offer a virtual session recently, last month. Was that last month? Yeah, and it was so cool to be with people in the virtual space, but to like really get into a good like 45-minute session where we really went there, and to hear people's responses after of like, oh, like, wait, what was that? But also I feel great. So it's a fun way. Someone called it like an intentional rave, or like, you know, intentional, like, yeah, that type of energy. So that's what it's all about.
Yeah. I mean, the session that I experienced was a shorter session, mm-hmm. and I kind of wanted it to keep going. I think, I mean, like, for the space and for the time and for what we were doing, yeah. like it was perfect. Mm-hmm. But I was like, wow, this was not what I expected. It was, like you said, very liberating, very freeing. And I kind of like, I'll admit, I kind of was like, oh, well, I'm going to take pictures. So I'm just going to like, I'm not going to like be part of it.
Thank you. Yeah.
And when it started, I was like, no, I need this. I'm going to do it. And so I did take pictures, but I did take time for myself to experience that. And it was amazing. And even as you're talking about it, like I'm kind of transported back to the experience. And every time you say breath, like I'm like, let me take a breath. And so I think it is like a practice that I hope becomes more normalized or more mm-hmm. talked about because mm-hmm. it really is like, I don't know, especially as a Latina, like I just yes. connected and resonated with it so much.
Mm-hmm. Or there's something cultural there, right? Of like the dance, especially like in community with each other. Yeah, there's something really, really powerful that we get to tap into when we like let all of it go. Cause I feel like that's, you know, there's also something really vulnerable, especially about doing it in person. It's like, oh, what are people like gonna say? Look at me. And that's why I was like, the virtual space is a little extra special because you could turn your camera off, or like, even if you do see other people, like everyone's in their own experience. So definitely I'll let you know when our next virtual one happens, because that might be a good time to like, let's see, you know, like, let's try it on a little bit. But I'm really glad that it landed for you in that way, because I think a big lesson and opportunity that somatic healing gives us is remembering that healing doesn't have to like be painful or be work. Like healing can really be joy. It can be like ecstatic. It can be just liberating, you know? And I really do believe, for me in my healing and also with somatic healing, a big lesson has been like, because my nervous system was so activated and ready for, you know, anything for 24 years of my life, the learning now has been like, how can I be in peace? How can I be in joy? How can I be in love and allow myself to feel those things? Like healing has helped me grow my capacity to experience joy. And I think with somatic movement healing, especially in those moments where you actually let go and your mind is actually off and you're just like, yeah, I'm in the experience, let's go. Then it's like, you know, just practicing being in joy. It's like, I think we need that. We need to practice like just experiencing joy.
Yes. And what is bringing you joy right now apart from your somatic movement?
Yeah. Such a good question. I feel like it's different each day. Easy answer for me, what's bringing me joy is when I'm present. When I'm present in my reality right now. A lot of times I notice my mind take me to like the future, especially in like the times we're living in today, where we're again so overstimulated, we're seeing so much pain and suffering and awful things, you know, on our phones, and it's just like in our face, and it can easily take us projected into the past of times where we felt really scared or like our lives are in danger or something is not safe, or to the future of like, what's going to happen? I'm really scared about this. Like there's climate change. There's all these things, right? So it's like when I can come back to the right here, the right now, and I look around my space, I'm like, I live in a nice apartment. I have food. I have warmth. I have all these books. I have a beautiful animal, you know, like, and ground myself into what I have in the present. I'm like, oh yeah, we're okay. It's okay right now. You know, like that really brings me a sense of peace. And when I'm present, I can tap into the younger parts of me that do have very valid fears and things that they want to express. So what's been bringing me a lot of joy recently is tapping into my inner child, my inner niña, and being like, what would you like to do? You know, like, let's take a 20-minute, and I actually have to set a timer for myself or else I won't do it the full time. But I actually set a 20-minute timer and I'm like, it's you right now, baby girl. Like, right, you know, what do you want? And lately she's been wanting to doodle a lot. So I get my little sketchbook out and I just like make silly, sometimes ugly, but like just drawings that want to come out. I will go to Michael's and buy, this is like the real of my life. I'll go to Michael's and first of all, spend a lot of time there because I love Michael's, but is it Michael's? Yeah, the craft store. And I'll buy like a kit. Yeah, like I'm looking at it right now. I bought like a clay thing, like a kit where you like, you know, mold clay and then you paint it. And I'll just do like little crafts like that to just like, yeah, to let my inner child play and then remind my adult self, like, chill. Like the to-do list can wait 20 minutes, you know? So that's really been helping to bring me back to joy.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing.
It's fun.
I think of, yeah, watching my kids create and.
Isn't it fun? Yeah.
Yes. And I'm like, dang, I didn't get to do that when I was younger. So what encouragement or advice do you have for the next generation?
This is a beautiful question. And it like reminds me of a project that's sitting in my drive, of a passion project that I'm starting to work on more and put more energy towards. But what it is I want to write a book or some sort of like graphic novel-esque, though, because I know what the kids are reading these days. They're not going to read an actual novel. It's just not what's happening. Graphic novel-esque book that kind of answers this question, really. So it's like, when you asked me that, that was the first thing I thought of, like, oh, yeah, that project. Because there's so much I want to say, and there's so much I want to validate and affirm in kids of today, because there's no way that I could even begin to understand what it's like to be a kid today. So there's just a lot of like compassion and like love that I want to send their way, and strength that I want to send their way. But as we've been seeing, I feel like with these generations that are coming after us, and which always just give me so much hope, is they're changing, right? And they're like better than our generations were, which is, it's how it's supposed to be, right? But because, you know, our generation doesn't look at that as like, oh, you think you're better, like back in my day, like we don't do that. We're just kind of like, wow, like, you know, you let your kids create and encourage them to be themselves boldly. I think that's a huge piece that I'll pin at, is letting and encouraging kids to be themselves authentically without having to assimilate like we did, or try to fit in certain ways like we did, or straighten the curls, because the curls are fine. They're beautiful. Leave your curls alone. Let them be. And just be yourself. Like, be yourself authentically. Be weird. Be loud. Be colorful. Be creative. Like, I love that what we're seeing in these next generations is that that's a little more accepted, a little more, you know, their norm. Not totally, definitely not, but that's kind of what would be my last sort of message, of just like, be yourself and let it ride, you know. Yeah.
This conversation has made me so happy. It has brought me so much joy, and I'm so thankful for your time and just your willingness and vulnerability and sharing. So I hope that all my listeners connect with you, find you on social media. But where can they do that?
Yeah. Best place would probably be Instagram or my website at the moment. So on Instagram, you can follow at liberatedlearning.org. And my personal is at Dahlia Quintanilla. And then the website is liberatedlearning.org. So pretty simple. But yeah, I would love to connect, chat, you know, all the things. And thank you, Karina, for the space and time to share and get into the good stuff. I appreciate you so much.
Yeah. So would you say that if someone is an educator, they could connect with you through your workshops, and then anyone can connect with you through your somatic movements?
Yes, everyone and anyone is welcome to try the movement healing. Absolutely. Yeah, educators, occupational therapists, social workers, counselors, you know, those are the people that have already been drawn to the work. Also, like community organizations, you know, places that might need even like a curriculum refresher with whatever they're working on. We know a lot of our stuff is outdated, so that's something that we also work on and do with organizations. And yeah, anyone who's, you know, engaging with young people and wants to do that in a way that's restorative and healing.
Perfect. Oh my gosh. This has been amazing. This has been the perfect start to my day. We're recording in the morning and I love it. I'm going to go into the day and into the weekend like pumped and
just me like too.
Free. So thank you so much.
Yes. Thank you, Karina. So appreciative. Yes.
And I'm sure we'll connect. We'll hang out soon.
But hey, we got things. Yeah.
For now, I'll say goodbye and thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Bye. Talk soon.
Oh my goodness. Dahlia is such a joy to talk to. Definitely connect with her. There'll be a new episode every Tuesday. So after you listen, feel free to take a screenshot, post on Instagram, and tag at Elevating La Cultura. Or send me a DM. You can also comment on our YouTube video if you're watching online. I always like to hear from people and how they resonate with the stories that I share. So leave a review on Apple Podcasts so we can get more ears listening to these stories and we can continue elevating La Cultura. And if you haven't already, check out the Elevating La Cultura Comunidad on Facebook. We also host monthly Comadre networking events. So if you're in Chicago, join us for one of those. All upcoming events can be found on the website elevatinglacultura.com. All right, enjoy the rest of your day, afternoon, evening, whenever you're listening, y nos vemos next week. Bye.